Poke check, rap check, back check, slap check. Testing, 1, 2, 3. Poke check, rap check, back check, slap check.
Welcome to the Quick Restart. We cover 73 Division I men's lacrosse teams.
And we do it fast. Welcome back to the Quick Restart Podcast. I am Terry Foyd, joined as always by Quinn Kesnick, and we are going to begin where the weekend ended, and that was in Syracuse, where the Orange topped the Duke Blue Devils 9-8 in overtime. It was an unreal game that featured an unreal finish. Syracuse trailed 8-4 after a Brad Smith goal with 6:28 remaining, and at that point, Syracuse fans started to leave the building. Then, an emo goal by Nate Solomon, an emo goal by Bradley Voigt, David Lipka with a righty sweep with 3:15 to go, cut the Duke lead to 1. Solomon assisted Steven Rafis, who broke out of his scoring slump in this game, to tie it with 1:24 remaining. Cuse had one more shot in regulation, but Brennan Curry's on-the-run rip hit the crossbar. He got redemption in OT, however, after Duke midfielder Kevin Quigley's shot was blocked. It looked like Cuse was going to struggle to clear the ball. They were facing a failure to advance. Solomon then fed Curry on the doorstep for the crease finish. Quint, what a game. I know you were at wrestling all weekend. Did you get an opportunity to see this one?
I did. I watched some softball, and then I watched it in its entirety. I would not call it an incredible game. I would call it an interesting finish in the final 8 minutes or so. But the prior action, quite honestly, was defensive-based, really good defenses by both teams. I give Syracuse a lot of credit because their offense was gross. Turnovers, bad shots, they had nothing going on. And they were looking like certain losers. But they held tough. They held strong. Things weren't going their way. They're down 7-3 and then 8-4. They stayed with it. I thought their extra man was critical in this win. And then their defense, they have with Brett Kennedy and Mullen, Nick Mullen, they have two of the better cover guys. I like their shorties a lot, and they played good defense for 60 minutes. They kept themselves in the game by doing that. Now on Duke's case, their offense wasn't exactly humming at any time in this game. They were efficient to a certain degree, kind of slowed things down in the second half. And then, late in the game, they just didn't get enough possessions and wasted some. And then they started making some mistakes on defense, whether it was giving Lipka the middle of the field or whether it was not having the right matchup on Curry. A bad approach cost them the game. JT Giles Harris lost his man for the tiebreaker. So you point to individual mistakes in the last 5 minutes of the game after playing a really solid 55 minutes. So I'm not sure which way to go. I thought both teams played great defense. This game lacked transition. It was a slowdown type half-court game. It was entertaining the last 10 minutes.
There was something about what you just described that was also true in Denver's 7-6 win over Towson with respect to felt like both offenses weren't sharp. Defenses made some decent plays, but ultimately it was Towson's mistakes that cost them the game. And I want to use that as a springboard to open up the question. We're going to talk about these four games in greater detail. I don't think that Duke, by virtue of losing this game, it affects their resume too much. They have an opportunity to rebound in the near term, and certainly for Syracuse, this is a big win. But it seemed to me, heading into this one, like the theme of the weekend was teams in trouble. So let me ask you, is each of these four teams, are they slumping? Are they in trouble? Are they just not good enough to either make the tournament or win a game once they get there? And the four teams are teams that at certain points over this year there might have been some certain height on, particularly the last two: Johns Hopkins, Notre Dame, Cornell, and Towson.
Okay, give me them one at a time.
Johns Hopkins.
Has never looked like an NCAA caliber team at any point this season. I actually expected them to lose at Carolina. The Princeton game could go either way. They got those two wins, so that keeps them alive for the at-large. I don't think they have a chance to take home the Big Ten title, obviously with Penn State, Ohio State, and Maryland in the league. They can get into the tournament, and maybe they win a game, they get to the final. That'll bode well for their at-large resume. But right now, they to me do not look like an NCAA tournament team.
Notre Dame.
I still like Notre Dame. Notre Dame and Hopkins are similar in that they've had coaches who have been there nearly 20 years. And so you kind of know what you're going to get. The good news for Notre Dame is they have all these young talent. Connor Morin, Griffin Westland, Wheaton Jacobice. Their defense is relatively young. You know, Arden Cohen's only a sophomore. So their young parts have to get better. You know, I thought they bounced back on Tuesday with a nice win at Michigan. That's not an easy scenario. They finished that game with good momentum, but then losing to Ohio State, it's kind of like the same old, same old. So Notre Dame will get over the top when they somehow do something internally that changes things a little bit. Okay. Otherwise, it's just going to be the same old Notre Dame team who's going to be a top 10 team, but losing the quarters or the semis or the finals. I think they have the talent there to make a run for this whole thing. But something's missing. And right now I'd have to go back and look at a little more tape on their game against Ohio State to figure out what the issues are.
Cornell's
defense and lack of faceoffs put them in an impossible spot in a year where the top 10 or 12 teams are separated by centimeters. You cannot be a championship caliber team this year if you're that deficient in two of those categories. So coming off the wrestling tournament, what it taught me is you got to be strong in all three positions. That is good to excellent on your feet, on the bottom, on the top. Okay. If you're deficient in any one of those, it's unlikely you'll win the title. It's the same in lacrosse. We got offense, we have defense, we have specialties. Okay. We'll go goalies and fogos, and they'll go extra man and man down. And we'll group that in the specialty division. Okay. Cornell right now is subpar in their faceoffs. They're subpar in their half court defense. Their offense is spectacular, but that doesn't matter. And so no team given deficiencies in two areas like that is a legitimate title contender in my eyes. Now, I do think they have better days ahead. I think they'll figure it out a little defensively, and they can make a run to make some noise in the Ivy and pick up some wins that could get them an at-large selection.
And finally, Towson.
Towson, you know, there's a lot of hype about Towson, and you look at their early season wins over Johns Hopkins. That doesn't amount to much. Their win over Loyola was a matchup issue. It was a midweek game at night where they caught, you know, Loyola, who was thinking highly of themselves. Loyola's not particularly strong in the face-off department. They caught lightning in a bottle that night. So I still see some offensive issues. You know, defensively, they have a good goalie. Kobe Smith is a strong cover guy defensively, and obviously have Zach Goodrich. But other than that, I think teams are starting to figure them out. So this is the type time of year where teams have to evolve and they have to change and they have to improve. This is where coaching becomes more of a factor because there's a bulk of tape. There's weaknesses and strengths that are identified both internally and externally. How you react, how you grow. What's the next step to your development in terms of personnel and schemes? And we haven't seen Towson develop over the last 3 weeks.
That was an excellent breakdown, but I want to throw you one quick curveball, and it's the number one team in the country. The Penn State Nittany Lions beat Cleveland State 15-11 over the weekend, and they played without Grant Ament, whose health status going forward is a question. He was referred to as a team spokesperson as day-to-day. Do you have
Aren't
any
we all?
Concerns? Well, that was my reaction as well. Do you have any concerns about Ament and Penn State?
Absolutely. That's why I'm not putting them at number one this week. I got Maryland at number one this week right now. Got Penn State 2, Yale 3, Ohio State 4. That's for the time being. That's not finalized yet. I'm still grinding here. But a 15-11 win at Cleveland State without Grant is good in that they scored 15. It's still a little upsetting that they're giving up double digits on a weekly basis. But you take Grant out of the mix, he's worth, I don't know, six, seven. He's averaging 7 points a game, 8 points a game. His substitute might be a 2 to 3 point guy. So that's a -5. And again, what I learned from the wrestling tournament, if when it gets down to it in May, when we have a lot of good teams, if you're not fully stocked, if you're not healthy, you will not win the gold trophy. And it's probably unlikely that you make it to championship weekend. That goes for anybody. That goes for Jared Bernhardt at Maryland. That goes for Jackson Morrill at Yale, T.D. Erlin at Yale. That goes for any of these teams that lose such a valuable component. I don't think anybody this year with this grouping of really good teams is going to be strong enough to overcome a catastrophic injury to their star player.
So let's move on to the games. I thought that Ohio State's 11-10 victory over Notre Dame in overtime was particularly impressive, not just because it was Ohio State's first signature win of the season. Folks made a lot of a lot out of the fact that in their 6-0 start, they hadn't landed a quality top 10 win. And for me, this is a game defined in two ways. The first, you know, Notre Dame for the second time in as many Saturdays. You mentioned their midweek win over Michigan, but relinquished fourth quarter leads a week ago against Virginia, this week against Ohio State, of 4 goals. And I thought that it was Jackson Reed, the sophomore attackman, a lefty who came in with a lot of hype. It was his moment. He had 4 goals and an assist, and late in the game looked uncoverable. And ultimately it was his dangerousness, the degree to which he kept the defense on the heels, that led to that overtime game-winning goal.
They got parts. I mean, they got a lot of things to like. There's strong balance with this team in terms of a good face-off game. Typically, Trey LeClaire, Jasinski, Myers, Jackson, as you just said. You got Borges down low. Seems to, you know, he's been there forever defensively. They got a great shorty and Tarasenko. So there are parts that says Ohio State can compete with anybody. And while their early season schedule was soft, this win legitimizes them as a top 10 team. And, you know, I bump them all the way up to maybe the 4 or 5 spot. I got them at 4 right now. Why not? In a year, again, where everyone's bunched so tight, but they have a coach who's been there. They have a culture. And now their schedule, we'll find out a lot about them on a week-to-week basis from here on out. But why not? And this was a gigantic win, because had they not won this game, I think everyone rolls their eyes at them and says, yeah, well, that's what you get for playing that fairly easy schedule early on. I just think they're in a good spot, and I think it was a statement win. I hate to use that term because you guys at IL use it every week, statement, 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 but it was a statement win.
In the Saturday nightcap, the Virginia Cavaliers headed to Homewood to play for the Doyle Smith Cup. It is the last of this series that will be played for the foreseeable future, it appears. And once again, a fourth quarter run is what told the story of this game, trailing by 1. The Cavaliers reeled off, I believe, 5 straight goals and beat the Johns Hopkins Blue Jays 16-11 at Homewood Field. For this one, I thought Michael Krause looked like he was playing at, you know, a level that was a step ahead of his early season level when he was coming off of an injury in a scrimmage, I believe, and didn't necessarily look like himself, particularly in that game against Loyola in the season opener, and then for a couple weeks subsequent to that as well.
Yeah, spending time with that Virginia team prior to their Syracuse win in the Dome and watching Mike practice and talking to Lars Tiffany about it, that was the turning point. For his health and his ankle, you know, finishing off that game with 4 points. I think he was involved in all the late Cavalier goals. Now, this is a group that has clearly established that they're going to play for 60. They're going to play hard, and it's not always going to be pretty. You know, their defense is imperfect, but they're getting better, and they have athletes, and the attack is a handful. I mean, I think they if you look at the box score, they took like 20-something shots, the attack by themselves. I thought, you know, they were dangerous with their ride. You know, Hopkins has not been a good clearing team. Those goals hurt. They're painful goals to give up when you make a stop, and then next thing you know, you're scooping the ball out of the back of the net. And then Petey LaSalle has 2 goals. You know, if you're going to hold on a Fogo, you know, you're rolling the dice. And when you have outstanding shooters at the point spot, like so many teams do, whether it's Towson with, you know, the Woodall Sunday connection, or whether it's a Yale and wanting to hold on TD and you don't know how to play the point man, Jackson Morrow. Well, Hopkins held on LaSalle and he ran right down University Parkway and scored those 2 big goals. So I have a lot of respect for Virginia and the way they're playing. They're committed to playing 60 minutes. They can throw good athletes and bodies at you. And it's going to take I don't think we're going to see – you're not going to skate by the Cavs. Like, to beat them, you're going to have to go the distance.
I want to take a quick break to talk about the idea of mental toughness, because I think that's one of the threads that ties together Virginia, Ohio State, and Syracuse's wins. And certainly having spent the weekend around wrestlers for whom mental toughness is the difference between winning and losing, what do you have to say about that and the way in which coaches have to build a collective of mental toughness among a group of 30, 40, 50 diverse guys?
I completely, yeah, that's a good statement. And then that is exactly what we saw from Syracuse today, because it was not a good looking first 45 minutes. They played very good defense. When you hold a team like Duke to, you know, 8 goals through 3.5 quarters of play, that's good, especially nowadays in the shot clock era, and to be down, you know, 8-4. But it's that toughness to just hang in there. And then give yourself a chance for the rally. It's kind of the same with Virginia, although they're doing it in a more higher scoring fashion. You know, they want to play a faster paced game. They're going to try to set a fast pace and tire you out late. And then Ohio State, I think Nick Myers has always coached that way, and their ability, I think their strength is their balance. You know, as I said earlier, it's you got experienced pieces in a lot of different layers of your team. If those guys play well, then it's easier for the guys to come off the bench and play well. And Maryland's a team that has always shown toughness as well. They're prepared, they're ready to capitalize on your weaknesses. I thought, you know, watching some highlights of that Maryland Carolina game, every time Maryland got a mismatch, it was like every single guy in the offense knew exactly who they're attacking and knew what was going to happen, and then what the second option was, and where I should be, when I should cut, what our spacing should be. It was really beautiful offensive lacrosse. All 6 guys on the same page. All 6 guys understanding what we do well and how does it impact, or how does it relate to where the defense is vulnerable. So that's a form of mental toughness. That's a form of discipline. And Maryland certainly is always at the top of the list in that department.
Moving on, the Penn Quakers came back from a 7-2 deficit and outscored the Cornell Big Red 14-8. From that point on, led by Tyler Dunn's 5 goals and 1 assist, and Adam Goldner's 4 goals and an assist. Alex Rosner had the game winner and showed the IL staff pickers what was what.
Yeah, there's belief there. There's a nice belief for the Quakers right now. Consecutive wins over Cornell, Villanova, St. Joe's, and Princeton after that just brutal start where they played, you know, the who's who and the best teams coming off an Ivy League preseason, which is never easy. So what are they, 0-3 to 4? Now they're 4-3, and I got them well inside the top 20, and the win over Cornell vaults them for the time being into the second slot in the Ivy League, and they're looking like an at-large team more and more.
Yeah, they're an impressive team, and this was a game that I was only able to watch kind of out of the corner of my eye, more or less. And it felt like, I mean, to the earlier theme, a weird game in which Penn just kept chipping away. And to your point about Cornell's deficiencies at the faceoff X and defensively, obviously they gave up 16 goals, but they actually did cause some turnovers, do a nice job of picking up ground balls, and they played well at the faceoff X, and they got a decent, you know, 50% day out of Chase Erland. So it was just, like I said, it was a weird game, and that's a parlay into the game that I was at, which was Denver's 7-6 win over Towson. And that was a game in which the Pioneers benefited from what I would call 2 weird goals. They went ahead 2-1 on an own goal, which was a weird sequence in which Towson's clearing pass was picked off by Ethan Walker. He threw ahead the Pioneer shot, hit Tyler Canto, and the rebound bounced off of Gray Bodden and then back into the net. Austin French took that shot. And then in the middle of the early fourth quarter, in a trailing 6-4 after Towson had put together a little bit of a run to build their lead, Ethan Walker slapped a loose ball on the crease into the goal. And whether or not it was an in the crease situation, whether the dive rule applied, is certainly something that folks looked at. Talking to Sean Nadlin after the game, he didn't have an opinion on it, hadn't had an opportunity to see it. But those 2 goals were, I think, fairly described as weird, and ultimately they determined the final score margin. And I didn't feel like, with the exception of sophomore midfielder Teddy Sullivan, a lefty who is tall, physically imposing, and very slick. He wears number 33 and looks a surprising amount like Zach Miller in terms of his ability to just catch and immediately get into a dodge that'll find him into a good shooting position. Beyond Sullivan, I didn't feel like Denver outplayed Towson. You know, they were at a 14-5 face-off deficit. I thought that Towson, despite the fact they turned the ball over 20 times, which was clearly a factor in their loss to Cornell a week prior, Denver turned the ball over 17 times. It was really sloppiness, kind of matching sloppiness, and ultimately the Pioneers were able to come out on top. They've got a quick turnaround to take on a 2-5 Princeton Tiger team that lost to Yale 15-10 at the weekend, and obviously that's going to be a matchup that features some interesting, I don't want to call them off-field, but with Bill Tierney returning to, you know, the site of his dynastic program building at Princeton, it's going to be an interesting evening, and we'll see how the Tigers respond, because, you know, in talking with some folks that got eyes on that game against Yale, they were just scratching their heads at the fact that Princeton's 2-5, because in a lot of ways, they looked better than that, and if Denver doesn't play better than they played against Towson, I wouldn't be surprised if they were susceptible in a Tuesday is for the Hunter type of matchup.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm covering that game. 6 o'clock, ESPNU. Tierney's return with the 6 national titles, first time he's played at Princeton since leaving that program. My biggest issue with Denver right now, and my homework assignment between now and tomorrow, is what is wrong with Denver's offense? Okay, Denver's got a good D. I know they lost Dylan Johnson. They still have really good. I like their shorties. You know, Dylan Gaines has proven that's a nice defensive team with Alex Reddy between the pipes. We got that. But Matt Brown's this innovative offensive coordinator. What's going on with Denver's offense? They're not scoring goals like they used to. At no time this year have you looked and said, "Wow, look at Denver zinging the ball around, getting their layups, working the backside, working the inside." It's for whatever reason, their offense is not as potent as it has been. And I don't know if it's personnel. I don't know if it's scheme. I got to watch some tape tonight and tomorrow. I'm talking to Coach Tierney, obviously, and Coach Madeline on Monday as far as our prep. And again, 6 o'clock ESPNU, Anish Shroff, Ryan Boyle, 2001 Princeton Tiger national champ, who's recruited and obviously coached by Tierney. He'll have a lot of insight. And I'll be downstairs actually for that game on the field, probably in the freezing rain, before I embark on my hockey regionals on Wednesday in Manchester, New Hampshire. Can't wait.
Let's go ahead and hear from Denver midfielder Teddy Sullivan, close defenseman Matt Neufeldt, which is something you'll hear him talk about, and then Bill Tierney.
Coach Brown throughout the whole week was just kind of talking about like making that big play and like igniting the offense. And so for me, like, I kept getting that matchup and just kept taking it. But I thought as a team, like, this is just a really big win for us. Like, just kind of getting over that hump, getting that one big win. And I think this is going to move us in the right step forward. For me, it's kind of just been a confidence thing, especially coming in last year. This is probably because I wasn't playing at all coming in. I played around this time last year too. And then just having guys like Colton Jackson on the offense who's been there at the highest level in the Final Four and just giving me advice throughout the whole thing. So he's really helped me develop my game. And also Matt Brown, just he's the best, like the best in the game. So he's just helped critique me and just like and made me feel more confident in myself when I'm on the field. Yeah, it was a really gritty game. Like just like Coach T was saying, we were just battling the whole game. And so yeah, no, it was patience. It's kind of just like waiting and it's just not giving up and just like and it's kind of just not letting go of that drive to like to get that goal.
I think we held up great today. That was a total team defense effort right there. Everybody did great on their matchups, supporting each other off ball, turning guys, creating double teams. Everybody was in sync, and that attests to the work that our coaches did, put us through drills throughout the entire week. Luckily, we had last week off to be able to prepare even more, get those preparations, and adjust to that new lineup. And I haven't been down low at all very much, and those guys were just so great in helping me get adjusted and making me feel comfortable. And we have a plethora of poles up top that are able to run in, like Ober and Brett, they did a phenomenal job covering for everybody. And so just a complete total team effort there. And Reddy stood on his head today, played his best game of the year. Oh, yeah, I'm different world. Last time I was down there was my freshman year, and I got benched immediately. So it's it was a little nerve-wracking coming back down there. It was like, not great times. But, yeah, like I said, Gaines and Squires and Reddy being my eyes, helping me throughout the entire week, teaching me the ropes, kind of the little things that they've picked up on throughout the years, and they really helped me put me in the position there today.
Well, you know, as we were just saying, it's always a war, you know, these guys. Sean does just an amazing job coaching these guys, and they're just so physical and so strong, and it's just a battle. Today was, in one way, not what we thought it was going to be, but in another way, it always turns out this way with the one-goal game and just two groups of kids playing clean and playing hard. And, you know, some people would say it was a slow, sloppy game. I'd just say it was two really good goalies against two really good defenses. Proud of Brett Boos trying to battle with Alex. You know, it didn't win the numbers wise, but, you know, one of the goals was to not let him get any fast break goals. And, you know, we held that pretty close. So proud of the guys. Time to move on. And it's a big win for us. We've been looking for one all year. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we started the year like that. Against Air Force and Duke, we actually played really well going into the fourth quarter. With Duke, we were up 7-3 playing the same way. And then, you know, we had our tournament with Cleveland State and Utah that were kind of similar. But I'm trying to think. Oh, North Carolina, you know, they were a little too quick for us. So we felt like we were we had to pack it in a little bit more against Carolina. But then Dylan Johnson goes down 2 days before we play Notre Dame. And we were just – and no, all credit to Notre Dame. They played great. We were just so out of sync, you know, trying to decide who was going to take his spot. So we really went conservative in that game. And after that game, we just said, look, you know, we lost the game. We can't play that way. It's not our style. We got to play aggressively. And so we kind of, as one of the kids mentioned, you know, we unfortunately had last week off with the Ohio State game getting canceled because of the weather. And we just came back to the kids and said, look, this is who we are. Win or lose, this is who we are. Let's just play this way. And I thought they were really good at it today. Coach Orson's done an amazing job with our defense. And, you know, if Alex can make 8-10 saves a game, then we're going to be in. Then we're going to be in a lot of them.
What was your thought with Matt having played up top for so long for Brett's career to move him back down there?
Well, a lot of teams, it's you know, you kind of say moving him back down, but the reality is everybody's playing with four up top now. Mm-hmm. So it's just really a matter of who's – because he plays the wing of every faceoff, he really wasn't playing down low. When we could settle in and get our matchups, yeah, he was playing on number seven, but everybody, most teams now are playing with four up top. So really, with the poles and stuff, it doesn't matter. We've gone in one or two games, we've gone with a short stick playing against the other team's attackmen. So a lot more middies are facing poles now, just that Matt has. We just felt his experience, you know, he's a four-year guy at Maryland, been active player in three championship games. He gives us a little bit of maturity out there. He's fit in so well with the guys, and he's just got a little bit of savvy, you know. So we've tried other guys. It's been okay, but, you know, I thought he did a great job today.
All right, Quint, one of the things, you know, I mentioned that a theme of the weekend was mental toughness. Another theme were teams in trouble. A third theme is it was a good week to fly under the radar. And a couple of teams, particularly in the Patriot League, I felt like did that. Loyola, 13-8 victors over Bucknell. That's tended to have been a tougher matchup when it's played in Lewisburg than it is when it's played in Baltimore. Lehigh, 15-8 victors over Navy. Ultimately, the Mountain Hawks, after an early season struggle, have rebounded in much a similar way as Penn has.
There's a bunch of teams that I'm really impressed with what they're doing. Lehigh is one of them. Okay, they figured it out. Marquette, another. slow start, personnel issues, off the field stuff, injuries. They take down Georgetown. That's an epic win in the Big East this year, which is suddenly blown open. Mount St. Mary's, here we go again. They beat Robert Morris this week. That's 2 weeks in a row. Great conference wins, Bryant and Robert Morris. So there are some teams outside the top 20 who are now, you know, crawling into consideration and becoming players for their league AQ, or at least to host their league tournament. So, you know, those are three teams I got my eyes on, and I think they're dangerous. You know, Lehigh, you guys had really high preseason. Obviously, they had a rough February and early March, but they're back to being who we thought they would be. And I think the same goes for Marquette.
Well, let's go ahead and hear from Lehigh head coach Kevin Cassis.
Anything about the second half that you guys were able to get more comfortable in or get the offense going? What was it about that explosion there?
Yeah, I felt the big difference in the second half had everything to do with the ground balls. I thought our guys hustled more in the second half. I thought we were getting out hustled in the first half. And when we were able to make a little bit of a run in the third quarter, it really started with the ground balls in between the boxes. We've had some huge plays, you know, in particular, you know, Lucas Spence's big ground ball at the box, or Tommy Schelling, we score off of that. You know, I felt like that kind of settled us in a little bit, and then we were able to roll from there.
I thought Lucas had a big day. You mentioned that ground ball. He had a couple nice runs at the cage going against a long pole. Was it just a good day for him, or a good matchup? What was his success today?
Yeah, I think, you know, Lucas is, he's just an absolute warrior, and, you know, he's not playing at full strength. You know, it's still like you just know what you're going to get from him. And, you know, he just showed up and really got after it today. I thought, you know, in some key moments, you know, we really needed a, you know, kind of a key senior to step up, and he was that senior, you know, like that ground ball. And then he had some timely goals in our run in the second half. And I think for him, he's incredibly dependable, and he's an absolute warrior, so we're going to keep calling his number.
I also thought goalie today looked really strong, especially in that first quarter. Hit four saves in a row to get you guys going. Good game from him today as well.
Yeah, we needed it too. I thought our defense was struggling. I thought their offense was reeling and playing well in the first half, and I thought we needed James to stand up and make some saves, and I thought he did. And, you know, we were able to weather the storm going into halftime and, you know, make a couple adjustments coming out of halftime. And honestly, it was just about kind of setting our guys down and committing to the ground a little bit more. And then, you know, being able to work the offense a little bit more. And another key adjustment was moving Tommy Schelling to attack. And I felt like that really helped us, gave us a little bit more in the in-between. And he made some huge plays, both, you know, goals and assists. And, you know, just you know, helping our offense click a little bit more. And I thought that was a big boost for us as well.
I want to say you guys are 4-0 in Patriot League play at this point. I mean, always big gains, but it's got to be nice to get that nice start in the league play with those.
Yeah, I think it's huge. I mean, you know, the fact that we're 6-3 right now, and we're 4-0 in the Patriot League, and we're still, you know, battling through injuries. You know, we had a couple other guys that were out today. You know, we've had a bunch of guys that have been out all the way throughout. So I'm proud of the resiliency that our guys are showing, just that, you know, whoever is able to play and is active, they just go out, they play hard, and it's resulting in victories right now. So I'm really proud of that effort.
All right, Quit, you mentioned Marquette's 9-8 win over Georgetown and Mount St. Mary's 14-11 win over Robert Morris. A couple others that I think are worthy of mention: Hobart, 10-9 victors over Sacred Heart, and Jacksonville, 12-10 over High Point.
The Jacksonville High Point game, and you have to credit you. I want you to admit to the fans that I texted you a month ago, saying that High Point's biggest challenge to running the table is on 3/23. At Jacksonville. Is that a fact?
You did. Well done.
Yes, I did. That game just stood out. It stood out in so many ways because Jacksonville is so much better than the record indicates. And going down there, we've seen how they, you know, they should have beaten Ohio State last year. We've talked about that before. But they give teams fits. When teams go down to Jacksonville, man, it must be that murky air. So that game did not surprise me at all. My struggle right now is what to do with High Point. You know, wins over Virginia, wins over Duke. Do you keep them in the top 20? I think you kind of have to. How far do you drop them? you know, that is a debate that I got going on right now at my desk.
Well, we can't wait to see the results. So make sure everybody head to InsideLacrosse.com to check out Quint's Top 20. It's the most popular feature every Monday, in addition to the Inside Lacrosse media poll. As Quint, you mentioned, 6 p.m. Tuesday, the Denver Pioneers head to the Princeton Tigers. Bill Tierney returns to the site of his dominance. And beyond that, if you like what you heard, tell a friend, leave a rating and review, hit us up on Twitter. He's at Q Kesnick. I'm at Terrence Foy. And of course, listen to all the Inside Lacrosse podcasts. Quint, we'll be back next week with more of the Quick Restart.
Yep. I just want to encourage the fans to turn in to ESPNU next weekend, Saturday noon, Syracuse, Notre Dame. 2 o'clock, you got Duke, North Carolina. Also next weekend, Maryland, Penn State on BTN. I believe that's a Sunday night game, 7 o'clock on BTN. Could be a 1-2. Everybody rally around the TVs this weekend. The more fans that watch lacrosse, the more lacrosse we'll put on TV. It's a simple game.
Poke check, rap check, back check, slap check, testing 1, 2, 3. Poke check, rap check, back check, slap check.
Welcome to the Quick Restart. We cover 73 Division I men's lacrosse teams.
And we do it fast.